dibs.
Yeah?
It's that time.
What time?
It's that time.
Not that time?
Your favorite time.
It is my favorite time. It's when I get nervous.
Do you?
The butterflies come out.
We mentioned this once before. On the River Islands guest line, it's the executive producer of NFL Films and our weekly friend and one of our favorites, Greg Cosell. Do you know that, Greg, that you make dibs nervous?
Well, now I do.
Yeah.
Now that you've mentioned it.
Yeah.
All you have to do is look at the tape from these interviews, and you can see. thank you, Greg. I thought you'd like that. It's pretty fair.
I'm not nervous. I'm just going to make it up as we go.
Okay, great. That's what I do every day. Let's rock. You know what? This is not where I was going to start, but I just saw it, and I wanted to run it by you and see what you thought. This is a quote that The Athletic just put out from an unnamed Super Bowl winning executive. Okay, an unnamed Super Bowl winning executive talking about Kyle Shanahan, who has taken his fair share of criticism this year after a 6-11 season. He said, quote, "Within the coaches in the league, no one thinks any less of Kyle Shanahan. It's ludicrous to think they should get rid of him. Andy Reid had the same criticisms early in his career, and now he's clearly in the conversation for best ever. Kyle Shanahan's criticisms are that he's lost a couple of Super Bowls. Do you know how hard it is to get to the Super Bowl? If you throw rocks at Kyle Shanahan and want him fired, he's going to have a job in 30 seconds. What's your reaction to that quote?
I agree 1,000%. I don't see, to me, that's not even a question. Like, I don't even think that would be, and based on the specific nature of that quote, I'm sure you were reading it word for word, correct?
Yep, word for word.
Basically, if you just take the tone of the quote, the guy's saying that anybody who thinks otherwise really knows nothing about football. That's the tone of the quote. And I would agree with that 1,000%.
When you look at what we saw from the tape this year, forget Kyle Shanahan for just a moment, but defensively, now that they're looking for a new coordinator, is it a scheme thing that you saw on tape, or was it more just execution defensively that allowed them to struggle at times, especially in fourth quarters?
Well, I would answer that, and I may have discussed that when you were not on, you know, toward the end of the year for those 2 weeks. I think that becomes a philosophy thing, and there's no right answer other than if you don't believe something is working, you might want to make a change. Because clearly this year, they chose to be a team that hardly ever pressured quarterbacks. They were a very low percentage blitz team. Now, again, we've seen in the past Fred Warner be a really, really good blitzer, adding in as the fifth pass rusher. We've seen that. I remember doing pieces for years in the matchup show where we showed five-man pressures, and Warner was part of the pressures, and they were successful. This year, they were a very low-percentage pressure team by NFL standards. So they relied pretty much exclusively on their four-man D-line pass rush, and they relied on coverage with seven in coverage. You can make the argument that, hey, that didn't work as well as they had hoped. I'm sure that's one reason that Sorensen is no longer the D coordinator. So now it comes down to philosophy, because you can be good any number of ways. You just have to decide what you think is the best way to play with your personnel. And they obviously believe that what happened this year didn't quite work out the way they hoped, that there's going to be a change.
Greg, I think a lot of people have been, I know I have been, looking forward to talking to you after round one of the playoffs and three specific quarterback performances that people thought were below par to ask what you saw. Let's start with Justin Herbert. And I know that at least one, probably two, maybe even three of the interceptions weren't really on him, or maybe I'm wrong. What did you see with his performance, and was it out of character?
Well, and I would say that, number one, their O-line got manhandled in the game, and he was under significant duress throughout the game. Number two, which probably should be number one, they couldn't run the ball at all, and they're a team with Greg Roman as the OC, and you guys are familiar with Greg Roman because he was there with Harbaugh. I think he was the OC when they went to the Super Bowl, if I'm not mistaken, back in, you know, the one in New Orleans, I believe, where the game was paused due to whatever. You remember that.
Yeah, the Harbaugh Bowl.
Yeah. But anyway, the point is they're a run-first football team in the way they play offense. And you know that in any number of ways, not only by their run-pass ratio, but by the fact that they use a converted D-end as a fullback. So they couldn't run the ball at all. So their whole offensive identity changed pretty quickly in that game, and their O-line was overmatched, which probably surprised many because they have the left tackle Slater, who's a good player, the rookie right tackle Alt, who had a solid year, but both those guys struggled all game, as did the interior of their O-line. So Herbert was under duress much of the game. So yes, did he play his best game? No. You know, it's funny, you guys didn't do this, but obviously, you know, I'm aware of what people say. You know, I don't spend a ton of time listening to everybody, but I love the way people evaluate quarterbacks based on these games as if, you know what, let's just get rid of him and move on and get someone else. I mean, well, it's just ridiculous.
As if they think
there's a quarterback store and you just go get another quarterback.
Well, sure. No, and Herbert and Jordan Love, I mean, look, they're signed up. They've had good years. They're talented. There is an interesting conversation, I think, around Sam Darnold. Not because he didn't have a good year suddenly. He did. But because we know who he was prior to this year, because he's a free agent, not signed up, that one maybe is a little bit different in my opinion. What do you think of what you saw him do on Monday night?
Here's what I would say. I would say in the Lions game 2 weeks ago that he missed far too many throws that we've seen him make all year. He just missed them, okay? But I would say in this game, this past week, he had no chance. He was under ridiculous duress the entire game. I spoke last week on a number of things I did that I thought that the key matchup in that game was going to be the Rams' defensive front versus the Vikings' O-line, which is not very good in pass protection. And I thought that was going to be the deciding factor in the game, and it was. So this game, to me, was not on Sam Darnold. You know, obviously he threw a pick that was, and by the way, his arm was hit. He couldn't follow through on that, so that wasn't even his fault. But so I didn't view this game watching the tape as, oh my God, boy, Sam Darnold was bad. The week before, he missed a number of throws. This game, they were just so significantly overmatched up front that I think there's probably four quarterbacks in the league that could have played really well in this game, and we know which four those are. So, yeah, so this wasn't, to me, a Sam Darnold game, but you know, that's the perception, and that's what I'm hearing all week. Oh, well, this is Sam Darnold's back being Sam Darnold, you know, and those kinds of comments to me just, when you say something like that, and I hope you guys aren't the ones who are saying that, because to me, when I hear that, I just think, you know, these guys, they just don't know football, and they're just saying stuff. It's like the guys who make these bold declarations Monday morning at 8 a.m. on the East Coast, of course, you know, and as they, all they've done is watch the game on TV. You know, you can't tell watching the game on TV what really happened.
Yeah, you got to watch the film, Greg, like you and I, and, you know, get really deep into the All-22. Taking that thought forward with the Ram defensive line, and Mark and I were talking before the show about how good this Ram defense has been over the last month. What do you see on tape from the Rams defense that can maybe not stop Saquon and Jalen in Philadelphia, but maybe slow them a little bit and make it uncomfortable?
Yeah, now this is a little different animal, okay, because the Eagles have a great D-line, and the strength of the Rams, great O-line, excuse me, and the strength of the Rams D-line is really their pass rush, okay? It's young, it's verse. Verse may be the best speed-to-power rusher in the league as a rookie. And then they have Fisk and Turner inside. That's their sort of NASCAR pass rush D-line. That's not the D-line that plays when they're in their base defense. Then they try to put bigger people in who can stop the run. Because both Fisk and Turner are probably under 300 or right around 300. They're not big guys relative to normal D tackles in the league. So this particular matchup is a totally different animal than the one from last week. So it's going to be very interesting to see what the Eagles do, how they choose to run the ball. Do they choose to run the ball with two tight ends and see if the Rams play their base D, or will they choose to run the ball out of 11 personnel, meaning three wide receivers on the field, and maybe they get the Rams pass rush unit on the field, but it's a lighter group and not as strong against the run. So, yeah, this game is nothing like matchup-wise like the Rams' D-line against the Vikings' O-line.
Greg Cosell, NFL Films, with us every single week throughout the season on Willard and Dibbs. Greg, I was with you last week. I am a big fan of the Broncos defense, and I was surprised at how easily or how well the Bills controlled the line of scrimmage in that football game, and it has me pretty high on the Bills going forward. But what was your take on the way that one played out, and what does it mean for the Bills going forward?
Yeah, that was a surprise, I think, because I think that the D-line for the Broncos had played well all year. Their defense had played well all year. But the Bills clearly felt, based on their film study, that they could come out and run the ball. They could line up with six O-line personnel, which they've done more than any team in the league by a wide, wide margin. And they did that in this game, and they ran on first down. You know, Cook had 13 for 78 in the first half. Nine of those 13 runs came on first down. So their game plan was clearly to run the ball, whether the Broncos were in their base defense or their nickel defense. They played 10 snaps with six O-linemen in the first half. Eight of those were runs. They clearly believed in their game planning, film study, everything that goes into that process, that they could line up and physically beat that Broncos defensive front, and they did. And I think that surprised a lot of people. Now, having said that, looking forward, that Ravens defensive front is big. That is one of the biggest defensive fronts in the league, and it's tough to move them. So I'm going to be very intrigued to see if the Bills take the same approach. The other factor in this game is they were playing a Broncos offense that they probably felt was not going to put up 30 points. So they probably felt that they could be patient. They could play the kind of game that they did and just kind of gradually pull away and win fairly handily. But it took the second half for that to happen. Will they feel... what kind of game will they feel this one will be? In other words, will they feel that they have to score more points early and make it more of a Josh Allen game? And I think that's one of the most intriguing elements of this game.
And how does the Buffalo run defense stack up against the number one rush offense in football in the Baltimore Ravens?
Well, that's going to be a tough deal. That's a really, they're a really difficult offense to play against. The run game is really hard because of both Lamar and Derrick Henry. The pass game, Lamar has been phenomenal this year. So it's, they're a really hard offense to play against. I think that the Bills secondary, you know, is probably not a great secondary overall. Now, Sean McDermott's been doing this a long time, and someone who's a lot smarter than I am, Bill Belichick, I heard him talk about Sean McDermott and how he does little things, little wrinkles that can be difficult for offenses to, you know, things that, unless you really know, he knows more than I do, obviously, you know, so... you know, I think that stuff's going to have to happen in this game for them to have a chance. And their D-line is going to have to play great. Their D-line is going to have to really play at a super high level, because that run game, it's hard in multiple ways. It's hard physically, and it's also hard schematically.
I'm also interested, well, both of the other games, quite frankly. I mean, Kansas City, we've talked so much about how there's the people we all know in Mahomes and Kelsey, but that team also has one of the best defenses.
They sure do.
Right in the NFL, and now rested and home and all of these things. Like, what did Houston do in their somewhat surprising game against the Chargers that would carry over, if anything?
Well, you know, Houston's in an interesting situation. They've got a really, really good defense. They've got two phenomenal edge players in Anderson and Hunter. They've got two really good corners, Stingley and Lassiter. The Lassiter's been phenomenal as a rookie. You know, so their defense is really good. And they've got more players than that, too, but they're the ones people know about. But yet, offensively, I think, look, I don't think this game's going to be 35-30, but I think that they're going to have to score some. And, you know, Stroud's been up and down this year. I thought he made a couple of really good throws last week, but for the most part, he's working through his development. See, this is the other thing I find interesting. When people talk about these guys, you know, it takes time. He had the great rookie year, so all of a sudden everybody assumed he's on his way to the Hall of Fame. You know, this year, you know, a couple of things started to stand out. He struggled a bit in the pocket when there were people around him. You saw last week that the offensive staff, they really built a beautiful game plan. Everything was quick rhythm. Get the ball out, because that's who he is. At his core, he's a pocket quarterback who needs to play with timing and rhythm. So, but, you know, Steve Spagnuolo, There's not a better situational defensive play caller in the league, especially with pressure, than Spags. And that's going to be a really intriguing part of this game.
How does Kansas City look to you when you look at the film offensively? Because I see a passing attack that is really middle of the pack,
yep,
and a run game that is almost bottom five in football.
Yeah, they've become a team that's really not great on offense throughout four quarters. But in those critical, what we call high-leverage situations, Mahomes seems to make a play. So they haven't necessarily scored a ton of points this year, but in those critical moments, they convert. I mean, keep one thing in mind. They are the best third-down offense in the NFL. A lot of people might not know that, but they convert on third down. And that's absolutely critical. And they've really turned into, I don't want to say turned into, but Mahomes has, I think, the second most dropbacks of any quarterback in the league. And that might surprise people, because this year, people aren't looking at the Chiefs going, man, that offense is just explosive. But yet they're a passing offense, even though they're not necessarily hitting 50, 60-yard plays. So, you know, they're kind of an interesting team. And keep in mind, you know, someone like Kelce, who, you know, a lot of people said didn't have a great year and he didn't numbers-wise, he's going to have 25 days off. I mean, you know, these guys are going to be rested and ready to go. They're going to be healthy.
Speaking of rested and ready to go and maybe getting a little healthier, I love the Detroit Lions offense, especially indoors, and it sounds like they're going to get David Montgomery back.
Yeah.
How does that change what they do, and going against a young Washington team, what do you see as kind of the pressure points in that game?
Yeah, I don't think it changes much of what they do, other than the fact that Gibbs probably won't get 21 carries a game like he's gotten the last three games. And boy, is that guy explosive. But just to show you how good, you know, their O-line is, just like the Eagles' O-line, like Saquon Barkley leads the NFL in the fact that he's almost 75% of his yards have come, you know, before contact. You know, same with Gibbs. He's in the 70% range, you know, so that's remarkable. Those, you know, the Lions have a great O-line. So Goff, you know, he's a pocket quarterback, but they protect him, and he may throw the ball between the numbers. He's a window thrower, as good a window thrower as there is in the league. So that's going to be an interesting matchup against that secondary. Obviously, Marshawn Lattimore is now back playing. He's still a quality corner. But their offense is difficult, because they can beat you so many different ways with a really good O-line and just good skill people.
I'm not asking you to put yourself in the minds of the voter or pretend you are a voter, but just watching the film this year, who do you think was the best offensive player that you saw on tape?
Oh, boy. That's one of those questions. The best offensive player.
Because you watched all the tape, and, you know, everyone wants to talk about who's the MVP, but I wanted to go to a film guy, Greg, a guy who actually sees it like I see it from an All-22 standpoint.
And, oh, boy.
And just see what you thought when you're looking at the tape. Who stands out as the most effective offensive player?
Boy, there's a lot of players in the league. I mean, I'm trying to look at the teams right now, you know, as the best. You know, again, we're not necessarily talking about most valuable. We're not necessarily talking about, you know, that. The best offensive player. You know, I'll tell you, the guy that comes to my mind, and you know, obviously he's a great player, so it's not, this might not be profound, but the guy that comes to my mind is Joe Burrow, and I'll tell you why. Because keep this in mind. When you go into a game every Sunday knowing that you have to put up 35 points just to have a chance to win, it's not even guaranteed that if you put up 35, you're going to win, but just to have a chance to win, I'm not sure people understand how hard that is. So given what he did this year under those circumstances, I would say that his name would just came to my mind. Again, you know, you're asking me a question that I don't have, you know, an hour to think about.
Yeah,
but that just came to my mind.
I like the answer.
Greg, are you an MVP voter?
I am not.
You're not. Yeah. Okay.
I'm not allowed to do any of that because I work for the league.
Got it.
There you go.
Got it. Okay.
So yeah, I can't be a Hall of Fame voter, although guys who vote for the Hall of Fame reach out to me to ask me my opinion, but I'm not allowed to be a Hall of Fame voter.
Okay, so you wouldn't even weigh in on Lamar Jackson versus Josh Allen on the MVP race.
And I'm to be honest with you guys, and I know fans might not like my answer, I don't care about that kind of stuff at all. Yeah, that's meaningless to me.
Yeah.
I mean,
Not surprised.
Yeah. That's why I asked it the way I asked it, because I didn't want you to get into the popularity contest aspect of it, but I like the answer with Joe Burrow.
Just like I don't like when people, like I heard someone talking, you know, because I'm on, you know, I see social media, obviously I don't sit there all day and look at it, but I mean, I hear some stuff, and I hear people, you know, saying things like, well, you know, if Josh Allen loses this game, you know, that's going to prove that he's really not that good, or, you know, if Lamar loses this game, well, then people are going to say he can't win. You know, I mean, you know, so, okay, so what is that, you know, what does that mean? So does that mean the Bills should get rid of Josh Allen?
Yeah.
Or the Ravens should get rid of Lamar Jackson?
Greg,
I mean, they say this stuff, and what does it even mean?
Greg, I'm moving on from the loser of this game.
No doubt.
I'm moving on.
Yep.
I'm out.
Yeah, I think they should just go to that quarterback store that I mentioned earlier and just, you know, get another quarterback.
Yeah. Sam Darnold, free agent.
Yeah,
there you go.
Okay, there it is. Greg Cosell says, pick up Sam Darnold and cut Josh Allen.
There you go, right, exactly.
All right, perfect. Yeah. Greg, thanks, man. Great to talk to you as always.
Guys, I love it. Thanks so much.
All right, there you go.